For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them. Amen. When I told my mom what I was thinking I'd preach about this Sunday, she sort of tilted her head. She paused for a moment and then innocently asked, "You've preached a lot, right?" "Well, of course, yeah." "Don't you have some old sermons?" I said, "Yeah. So here's a sermon I wrote in 2019 for you all." I'm just kidding. Against my mom's better judgment, I'll tell the real story. It begins with me, 5 years old. Now, I'm looking out here and I see some kids here with us today and some parents, some of you with younger children and some of you with children who are grown. If you've been a parent, you of course know that kids are not always easy. And you know, I was not always easy. My mom was in the throes of parenting a five-year-old son and me home after a long day of work, starting to make dinner. I was probably already being a bit of a pain when she finishes cooking and she plops down a plate of pasta before me. I give it a glance and immediately I complain. "This pasta has too much sauce." I'm sure she said something along the lines of, "Can you just eat it?" An age-old point of challenge between parents and their children. As you can predict, I did not just eat it. I threw a temper tantrum. And like an umpire to Lou Piniella, my mom gives me the well-deserved trip upstairs, not to my room. Too many books or toys or posters don the walls there to keep a little mind occupied. I got sent to her room, about the most boring place on earth for a five-year-old boy. So I stomp my feet up each and every step before crossing the threshold of the doorway and beginning to serve my sentence. I sit down on the corner of the bed and twiddle my thumbs for a bit. And growing more fidgety, I scan the room for something, just anything, until my eyes stop on a telephone sitting atop the nightstand. I look at the phone and the phone kind of starts looking back at me, just calling out. And in my blazing indignation, I get to thinking, you know, there's somebody who ought to hear about this. In a just world, in a world where sauces are served in their proper proportions, of course, it wouldn't be this way. I would not be the one sitting here. It can't be this way. I think to myself, "Mike, the cops are really gonna love it when they get a load of this." So my little fingers punch each digit with force. 9-1-1. The second that phone rang, a freight train of adrenaline just shot right through me. I regretted it all. I didn't even know the number would work. And then not only that the number was real, but they answered. 911, what's your emergency? The emergency is that I decided to call you, actually. I didn't say that, but as soon as dead air filled the line, I slammed that phone back onto the receiver just as hard as I'd punched the numbers to make the call. I jump back onto the bed and I thank God that I'm off the phone and that this whole situation has ended in mere moments. Of course, there's only one problem here. When you hang up on 911, they call back. So after a brief moment of relief, I hear the phone go off and I jump a little bit. I hear my mom pick up just as soon as it rings downstairs. "Hello? Hi, ma'am, this is 911. Did you just call us? Did I call you?" "No, absolutely not." First, she's confused, passing it off, I'm sure, as a simple mistake until she must have thought, "Mike." And she ran upstairs and says, "Did you call 911 over the pasta sauce?" I recognize that I am not the hero of that story, far from it. I don't have kids, but I'm sure that if I did, I would be embarrassed. That might not even begin to describe how I'd feel. If they'd called 911 over pasta sauce, I wouldn't want to tell the story. But that's sort of the point. The point is that we're bound to embarrass ourselves. And sometimes we're bound to embarrass ourselves over things more ridiculous than we could have ever conceived. The amount of pasta sauce on spaghetti, we can think of our own church equivalents to this story. I'm sure we're bound to act out. It happens. Sooner or later, more often or less often, in situations mundane or maybe in situations that are quite consequential for us, we're bound to eventually disappoint ourselves and those around us. And in turn, we are bound too to eventually be disappointed by those who we share community with. These things happen. What is less certain than the fact that indiscretions will happen is how we respond to them. In today's gospel, Jesus approaches these very kinds of situations in a way. We find ourselves in a moment in the gospel narrative where Jesus begins to give his followers the tools to build up this soon-to-be-emerging church. The transfiguration has come and gone. Jesus has foretold his death to his followers and is now setting up his disciples to encounter life and community in his physical absence. Immediately before today's gospel message from Matthew 18, 15 through 20, Jesus' disciples have a bit of a disagreement about themselves. They rush up to Jesus and they ask, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Just for fun, we can call this the disciples' pasta sauce moment. Jesus points to a child and he tells them that the child is in fact the best that the kingdom of heaven has to offer. We then hear Jesus launch into a parable of the lost sheep, telling his followers that nobody is dispensable. Jesus remarks, "Truly, I tell you, he rejoices over the one lost sheep more than the other 99 that never went astray. So it is not the will of your Father in heaven that these little ones should be lost." And so it is in this framework that Jesus' disciples hear today's lesson. They have understood that the community they are a part of seeks to be radically inclusive, not to shun out, but to be agents of reconciliation. But how do we reconcile then? Jesus recommends, if your brother or your sister sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone. How often do we fail to speak up when somebody hurts us? It can be so hard to tell someone when they have let you down. It might actually be the only thing that's harder than letting someone down yourself. But Jesus tells us that this is something we have to do if we want to have a healthy community. We have to communicate honestly. And with our honesty, we must appreciate the tenderness and the vulnerability of these moments pointed out when you're alone. My sister-in-law is a teacher, and while visiting me recently, she talked about a classroom issue that she had dealt with where a student was really acting out, and I foolishly just said, why don't you just put him on blast in front of everyone? She looked aghast. Having dealt with teenagers for long enough, she knew that this would totally amplify the problem. For teenagers especially, the sense of their shame and their need to impress their peers to call them out in front of their class would go horribly. Every teacher knows that you call out a student into the hall and you speak with them one-on-one. Even the most preposterous class clown suddenly shrinks into a reasonable character in the hall. But even one-on-one discussion doesn't always work. We know this. Jesus says that when this doesn't work, bring somebody else in. In my own case, I opted to use the ultimate mediator, you could call it, in 911. Have you ever been so sure that you were right in a situation until you told somebody else what you were upset about? I hung up that phone so fast because something inside of me knew somewhere that I was wrong. Mediators can help to bring down some of our elevated emotions, find common ground, return to relationship. Having a mediator, what good advice? But unfortunately, Jesus tells us even this tactic doesn't always work. After taking our disputes to a formalized church body, if that doesn't work, Jesus' only advice is this. If the offender refuses to listen, even to the church, let such a one be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. On its face, this might sound dismissive or scary, that you'll get tossed out and cast aside until we remember how Jesus approaches the Gentile or the tax collector. In the 9th chapter of Matthew's gospel, we are told of Jesus paying a visit to the tax collection station, a thoroughly deplored space, especially considering that those taxes were being paid to a distant and often hostile empire. There he meets Matthew, a tax collector, and simply says, "Follow me." Matthew does and throws Jesus a big party at his house. Naturally, most of the guests there are, what, tax collectors. When critics attack Jesus for hanging out with such figures, he replies as follows, "Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice." In these encounters, Jesus shows us that we are not to arbitrate with a sense of self-righteous judgment, but with abundant mercy. When we try to reconcile and it doesn't work, people may not be in our community, but we have a continued responsibility to them. And when we all agree on these same principles, that we are not to judge self-righteously, but that we are to show each other mercy, if we can enter even into our disagreements with that agreed upon principle, we can solve quite a lot. And what we can't solve, maybe we don't carry it quite as heavily. And these arguments, these kinds of discussions, they are oftentimes really hard for us. I mentioned that earlier. It's hard to take someone aside and say, "I really didn't like when you did that." But how does Jesus end this gospel? Jesus says, "For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there among them." We might think about that in relation to worship. If two or three are here, great. We have the Eucharist. You don't practice the Eucharist privately, but in community. Less often do we think about this statement in relation to conflict. That when I'm having a disagreement with one person, when I have an arbiter, God is there to guide our conversations. These can be holy conversations. And isn't that the mission of our church? Isn't the mission of who we are to reconcile? To reconcile ourselves to God, to reconcile ourselves to our neighbors, and to take that gap and narrow it between the world that God has desired for all of us and the world that we have before us? There's a blueprint here for a really wonderful opportunity. Amen.